Coming up right now is The Space Show, and we begin this evening with a piece of music that sets up our main topic. Here are The Ventures with Skylab. Welcome to The Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this week's The Space Show, we mark the 50th anniversary of the launch of the Skylab space station using archival mission audio, the recent comments exclusive to The Space Show of astronaut Joe Kerwin, and some songs. You're listening to The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. Now, Skylab was the first United States space station. It was launched 50 years ago and remained in orbit until 1979. Now, Skylab is remembered in popular culture more for its crash into Western Australia than for the amazing achievements of the 9 astronauts who lived aboard. Take, for example, this 1979 song by the Australian group XL Capsis. It is titled Skylab and subtitled Son of Telstar.
USA. USA. Slap it, slap it.
No, that sound wasn't the sound of thunder, electrical lightning. It was the supposed sound of Skylab crashing into Western Australia. Well, that song was never released as a single, but has appeared on compilation albums. And it was written by Tim Gooding and Kimball Rendell. Now, Kimball Rendell may be familiar to you as the second unit director for the movies The Matrix Reloaded and The Matrix Revolutions. More about Skylab after these messages.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
By 1966, the development of the Apollo manned lunar landing project was well underway. Thoughts of those at the Marshall Space Flight Center in Alabama turned to how the Apollo and Saturn V rockets might be used in other ways. On 1966, August the 19th, George Mueller used felt pen and poster paper to set down a conceptual layout for a space station based on the Saturn IV-B stage of the Saturn V rocket. Now, Mueller was NASA's Associate Administrator for Manned Spaceflight. That initial sketch laid out three basic requirements. Firstly, long duration. Secondly, reusability of experiments. And thirdly, logistics resupply. Initially called the Apollo Applications Program, the project was later scaled back and renamed Skylab. The fuel tank of the engineless Saturn IV-B would be the main workshop. Attached to it was the Apollo telescope mount, which was a solar observatory. The Apollo Command and Service Module, launched separately, would ferry three astronauts to and from the orbiting laboratory. Meanwhile, in the Soviet Union, two series of space stations were under design. The first were the Almaz orbital piloted stations, designed in late 1964 by Vladimir Chalamet. The second were the Salyut durable orbital stations by Sergei Korolev. Design began in 1970 February. In only 16 months, the first Salyut was launched on 1971 April the 19th. Soyuz 10 and 11 were launched to Salyut 1. Soyuz 10 failed to hard dock, forcing the crew to return to Earth without boarding the station. Soyuz 11 docked, and the crew spent 23 days living in Salyut 1. The three crewmen were killed by asphyxia caused by failure of a valve just prior to Earth entry, although the Soyuz 11 landed successfully. Other Salyut and Almaz stations were flown after the launch of Skylab. The Skylab plan was to launch a Saturn V with a station into an orbit of altitude 430 kilometres and inclination to the equator of 50 degrees. Next day, a Saturn 1B would launch an Apollo capsule with three astronauts. They would dock with Skylab, board it, and live there for 28 days. 60 days after their return to Earth, a second crew would ride a Saturn 1B to begin a 56-day mission. A third mission would launch about 30 days after the return of the second crew and also stay for 56 days. The nine astronauts would be tasked with the following main activities. Firstly, activating and maintaining the station. Second, biomedical experiments on themselves and the Annabelle, the spider. And thirdly, observations of the Earth. And fourthly, solar observations in visible, ultraviolet and X-ray light. Skylab was then to be left unattended until the space shuttle could ferry more astronauts up to it. As we shall hear, things turned out very, very differently. The final Apollo lunar landing mission, Apollo 17, was completed in 1972, December. 5 months later, Skylab was ready. The first crew would be commanded by veteran astronaut Pete Conrad, supported by first-time flyers Joe Kerwin and Paul Waits. 50 years ago, this coming Sunday, May 14, Skylab 1 was ready for launch. Although President John Kennedy was, in the popular mind, responsible for the Apollo missions to the moon, the real political support came from Lyndon Johnson. As President Johnson was pressed out of office by the escalating conflict in Vietnam, it was Richard Nixon who basked in the glory of the Apollo moonwalkers. 1 month after Apollo 17 returned from the moon, on 1973, January the 22nd, Johnson died. Within a month, Senate Joint Resolution 37 called upon the House of Representatives to ratify a decision that the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston be renamed the Lyndon B. Johnson Space Center. On 1973, February the 17th, President Nixon signed that order. And henceforth, the Skylab and later shuttle missions would be controlled by the Johnson Space Center. Countdowns and launch initiation were still done by the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Here's how the Skylab 1 launch countdown went.
Mark, T-minus 1 minute and continuing to count. A water deluge system now has been turned on, activated at the pad area. Pressurization taking place now. The various tanks aboard the vehicle being pressurized, switching to internal power. All propellant tanks being pressurized, and the countdown continues to go smoothly. Guidance release, T-minus 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8. We have ignition sequence has started. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. And we have a liftoff. The Skylab lifting off the pad now, moving up. Skylab has cleared the tower.
After launch, Skylab had passed over the Mediterranean, the Indian Ocean, and south of Australia and New Zealand. At 2 hours 41 minutes into the mission, the public had the first indications there might be a problem.
This is Skylab Control. 2 hours 41 minutes, ground elapsed time in the mission of Skylab 1, Skylab Space Station, now in orbit, coming up on the Honeysuckle, Australia, tracking station. Still some doubt in the minds of flight controllers here in Mission Control as to whether the main solar panels on the workshop have indeed deployed. They've had no confirmation on the ground from telemetry that this is the case. The solar panels on the telescope mount have deployed normally. Also, the micrometeoroid shield around the workshop has partially deployed. The large wings of three sections of solar panels on each wing, one on each side of the workshop, generate anywhere from 51 to 125 volts, depending on the sun angle at the time. This power goes through chargers, which in turn keep storage batteries in the workshop built up to supply power throughout the mission. Half of each orbit approximately is in darkness when no power can be generated by the solar panels. The two solar panel wings are deployed out to the side of the workshop, and each panel on the wings operates on similar to a scissors action, spring-loaded to extend the panels. Getting data now through Honeysuckle. We'll stand by for comments to the flight director from the flight controllers who are concerned with the workshop electrical power system.
Two ground stations in Australia were involved in tracking Skylab. One was in Carnarvon in Western Australia, and the other one was Honeysuckle Creek in the Australian Capital Territory. One orbit after that report, that is 1.5 hours later, things were getting pretty serious.
This is Skylab Control. 4 hours, 14 minutes, Ground elapsed time, the Skylab space station mission. Here in the control center, the problems associated with the failure of the Saturn workshop solar panels to deploy are being discussed at some length by management and flight controllers. Preliminary telemetry indications are that there could have been a malfunction with one solar ray beam fairing and the meteoroid shield, which could have led to subsequent anomalies. These malfunctions were indicated to have occurred 1 minute and 3 seconds after liftoff based on post-launch examination of telemetry.
By now, it was obvious that it would be unwise to launch the Skylab 2 crew with three people the following day. And so there was discussion in Mission Control on possible alternate missions.
The planned 28-day mission is not possible without deployment of the workshop main solar panels. Project officials are considering an alternate mission using the command service module power system to augment the limited power supply provided by the Apollo telescope mount solar panels aboard the workshop through a system of managing the two power sources for the optimum usage. An announcement will be made as soon as these decisions have been reached. We're starting to get data now through the Honeysuckle Australia tracking station. This is a rather low elevation angle pass of a little over 4 degrees, or approximately, I stand corrected, that 86 degree is the max elevation on this particular pass, almost directly overhead at Honeysuckle. Almost 9 minutes remaining in this pass across Honeysuckle Station. We'll stand by on the Skylab control circuit for the Honeysuckle, followed by Hawaii and the next stateside pass. At 4 hours, 18 minutes, ground elapsed time, this is Skylab control.
And soon after that, there was a realization that temperatures will be a problem.
This is Skylab control, 1800 hours, Greenwich Mean Time. Skylab space station now crossing the northeastern coast of France on the 30th revolution, being tracked by the Madrid station. Cabin pressure aboard the Skylab workshop is holding between 4.5 to 5 pounds. Internal temperatures by the various sensors range in the low hundreds, that is around 115 to 120 in most locations. At the scientific airlock, the temperature is ranging from 170 to 190 degrees Fahrenheit. External skin temperatures are running between 240 and 300 degrees. Battery temperatures and power system, electrical power system, are running around 30 to 40 degrees, and sensors on the ATM Apollo telescope mount solar panels show temperatures of 90 to 100 degrees.
The Skylab was orbiting the Earth every hour and a half, every 90 minutes, and by orbit 58, there were other concerns being raised.
This is Skylab Mission Control at 2 seconds after the hour. Midway through its 58th revolution, the spacecraft is now traveling on a descending node over the Indian Ocean. It is on the dark side of the Earth. At the highest point in its orbit, it is now 237.7 nautical miles above the surface of the Earth. At its lowest point, 235.4 nautical miles. Present speed for the space station is 25,096.6 feet per second. The period of revolution is 1 hour, 33 minutes, 22.3 seconds. Flight Director Donald Putty has requested his guidance and navigation controller to provide him with instructions that will allow the greatest possible conservation of gas used by the thruster attitude control system. While maneuvering required to provide stable temperatures in the orbital workshop section of the space station has used about 24% of the total supply of attitude control gas, the remaining gas is more than double the minimum amount required to conduct all the experiments originally planned for an 8-month period with three separate astronaut teams. Nevertheless, flight controllers are taking action to maintain as large an excessive reserve of attitude control fuel as possible.
In Mission Control at the Johnson Space Center and at other centers around the United States, there was a mad scramble to see what could be done, what tools could be used, what would you have to change on the Skylab 2 mission to do this. And eventually it was announced that, yes, there was a new plan.
Notes on work that might be done by the first Skylab crew to deploy one of the solar panels that is believed to have stuck when the meteoroid shield was torn off shortly after Monday's launch suggest that the efforts will be made during the first daylight pass of the stand-up EVA. Attempts to deploy one solar wing will be made only if the crew feels that it can be done without difficulty. Because the wing has been on the shadowed part of the space station, the temperature may be too low for the solar panels to move out freely without further assistance, even if obstructions are removed by the astronaut. If the crew does not believe it can free the solar panels, which would provide another 6,000 watts of electrical generating power, engineering photos will be taken for use in planning the following second Skylab manned mission. This is Skylab Mission Control at 2 minutes and 10 seconds after the hour.
The first Skylab space station was called Skylab 1, and the first of the manned missions, the three manned missions, was called Skylab 2. And here we had this report on the preparations for the launch of Skylab 2, the first manned mission.
This is the Kennedy Space Center, Skylab News Center. The countdown for the launch of Skylab 2, scheduled for 9 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Friday, began on schedule at 5:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time today. After installation of flight batteries in the Saturn 1B second stage and instrument units, batteries will be powered up and a series of tests of flight control, radio frequency, and telemetry systems will be initiated. Loading of liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen in the command service module is scheduled for later today. Skylab 2 crew members Charles Conrad, Joseph Kerwin, and Paul White arrived at Kennedy Space Center late yesterday. This morning they are undergoing their F-2 medical examinations, and this afternoon they're scheduled for a bench review of items to be stowed in the command module and a stowage briefing. The tools to be used by the crew in work on the solar array and the twin pole solar shield that would be deployed from the command module by Joseph Kerwin during a stand-up EVA are scheduled to arrive at Kennedy Space Center about 12:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time today. The tools were developed by the Johnson Space Center and the Marshall Space Flight Center, and the twin pole solar shield by the Marshall Space Flight Center. The parasol solar shield that will be deployed by Paul Weitz from the Workshop Scientific Airlock is scheduled to arrive at Kennedy Space Center later today. The parasol was developed by Johnson Space Center.
And that report was on May the 25th. Yes, there had been 11 days passed before they were able to get that launch ready. More about Skylab after these messages.
88.3 Southern FM.
Our topic on this evening's The Space Show is Skylab, celebrating 50 years since the launch of the space station. And we have another song about Skylab. It's called The Skylab Song, and it's by Bruce McCandless III. That name sounds familiar, Bruce McCandless. Oh, yes, Bruce McCandless. Bruce must be the son of astronaut Bruce McCandless II. Now, this has a 30-second spoken introduction and mentions many aspects of the Skylab mission and the astronauts and the Skylab rescue plan and the fall of the space station. Now, Bruce recorded this in 2023, yes, this year, and his father, you've probably seen pictures of him because he's the guy who flew from the space shuttle without a tether on a jet backpack and flew a couple hundred meters away from the station. Quite an iconic sort of picture. So here we go with Bruce McCandless singing The Skylab Song.
Kids, I want to tell you about a space mission from long, long ago in a decade called the 70s when... What's that? You don't know about the 70s? Well, that's just fine, Timmy, because, frankly, they were awful. Ho Chi Minh won, the Beatles were done, and we all had to listen to Seasons in the Sun. In fact, the 70s were so bad that they sucked America's first space station right out of the sky. And what was that station called, you ask? I was just getting to that.
It was just a few years after Neil walked on the moon. A Apollo was over and it ended way too soon. Nixon said, I'm sorry, boys, and the money disappeared. There was one thing we could do, though, and that one thing was weird. It was called Skylab. Our stack of spare parts floating by, it was a dry lab. And don't you dare ask why we set up Skylab. It could be coming to your town, our beloved Skylab. I guess we'd better tell Von Braun. Now the men we sent up there were the best of the best. Lausma, Carr, and Kerwin, they aced every test. But they weren't set exploring, they just circled around, taking lots of photos of the Long Island Sound up there in Skylab. Our funky freak flag in the sky, a really high lab. And please don't ask me why we set up Skylab. There was no moping around, not a mutant eye lab. I think them boys was just wore down. By 79, the program was done. We'd learned what we could about the Earth and our sun. It came time to say bye to our orbital fun. There was just one loose end and it weighed 80 tons. That big old Skylab. Don't wanna hear another sigh. It's yours and my lab. And don't you dare ask why we sent up Skylab. It could be coming to your town, our beloved Skylab. There's no protection to be found. Then Skylab's orbit, it started to decay. NASA said we'll shuttle up, it's gonna be okay. John Young shook his head, said, boys, I'd like to oblige. But I'm not even half convinced this bird is gonna fly to rescue Skylab. I think we're all about to die, so pop that cord tab. Grab the whiskey, rum, and rye, please pass the dime back. Let's find a place deep underground and hide from Skylab. I hope our bodies will be found. A whole lot of barking, but not all that much bite. Skylab rained down on the great land of Oz. Now there's just a few of us who remember what it was. It was called Skylab, and its name will never die, our crazy Skylab. But spell that first word S-C, I give peace a try, lab. Repeat the joyous sound, the sound of Skylab. The whole damn thing came crashing down.
That was Bruce McCandless III, the son of Bruce McCandless II, who was a spacewalker, well, flyer, we could say, on one of the space shuttle missions. Now, on the Skylab 2 mission, which was launched on May the 25th, was astronaut Joe Kerwin. He was a medical doctor, and this was his first flight on the Skylab 2 mission, and he talked about this to the Space Association of Australia in a live video link. And we've got a few comments. Well, he made a few comments about his mission. And So here's Joe Kuhn talking to the Space Association of Australia about the Skylab project.
It is a great honour to have Joe Kuhn on the line. So it's great to see you, Joe. Can you tell us a little bit about the decision to cancel the Apollos 18 and 19 that followed it? Because that happened soon after Apollo 13, is that right? Because that was, I guess, one of the things that that accident was the catalyst for that. Is that correct?
Here I am. You know, I don't know the details of why 18, 19, and 20 were canceled. I certainly remember it happening. I kind of had my head down there training for Skylab and helping to develop procedures and things. That was my big job at that time. But I know it was a significant blow for several astronauts who had waited for years and had prime crew assignments on 18, 19, and 20. And I don't think it was primarily budget driven. I think it was primarily driven by safety considerations that the management at NASA and in the Congress didn't want to go through on Apollo 13 again. They said, we've been to the moon, we've done good science, let's quit while we're ahead. Kind of sad. But
yeah, I think Apollo 20 wasn't so much cancelled, it was reassigned. The Saturn V was reassigned to launch Skylab.
The Saturn V was, yeah. I was just about to say that we did benefit from that cancellation, because we went from a plan to launch the Skylab workshop, which was the inside of the S4B fuel tank, loaded with fuel. Okay, so after you got into orbit, you let the excess out and you refilled it with oxygen a couple times, or with the 70-30% mixture we used, and then go in there and assemble everything, which would have taken the entire first mission, I think. It would not have been nearly as slick and functional as the Skylab workshop was when it was properly built on the ground and launched empty. So we took a big sigh of relief and went on to other problems when that happened.
Now, of course, with Apollo 13, that was a great rescue, but your mission, Skylab, was another rescue mission, of course.
Well, it was risky to the program, we were proud of the program. It was the prototype space station for the United States. We felt that if we met our mission responsibilities, we would open the way to the declaration that President Reagan made later, that we needed a permanent presence in space, and that we could build a space station and crew it with crews being replaced every 3 to 6 months. So we were happy with that. And then, of course, the wing came off during the launch of the workshop, when I'm an old man and I lose my nouns. So I know perfectly well what I want to say. The heat shield on the Skylab workship ripped, and it took one of the solar panels off with it, and the other big solar panel was locked down. And so the only power we had when the thing got to orbit was the four smaller solar panels on the collection of telescopes that was called the Apollo Telescope Mount, which was fared in where the lunar module would normally go on a Saturn V launch. And after you got to orbit and you would jettison the panels, then this solar telescope mount rotated out 90 degrees so that it would point at the sun. And it was a marvelous piece of hardware. And its power, which is about a third of the original power, was enough for us to go up and live, but not to have hot coffee, and not to do a lot of the functions that we needed to do to have a successful program. So our challenge was to somehow free up that solar panel, get 2/3 of our power back, go ahead and do the three major functions that Skylab was designed to perform. Number one was to show that human beings could live and work and do good work in space for periods of initially up to 2 months. The plan was to fly 28 days for the first mission, which we did, 56 days for the second mission. They flew 59, and the 56 again for the third mission. But the first two missions had been so successful that they extended the third mission to 84 days, close as they could get to 3 months. And that was very important, and required the third crew to make a major sacrifice and have Carnation instant breakfast bars for breakfast for 3 months because there wasn't enough food up there, and that was all they had room for. So what our crew was challenged with was, number one, to get some kind of a manually deployed heat shield over the sunny side of Skylab to bring the temperatures down into a working range, and we did that. That was fairly easy. And then 2 weeks into the mission, to do a spacewalk and get out there, Pete and I, and try and free up that solar panel. And thanks to the excellent preparatory work done by the backup crew in the water tank at Marshall, they figured out a way that they thought would be feasible for us. And once we got ourselves stabilized, we were able to carry that plan out. So the risk was to the mission, not to the crew, as it was in Apollo 13. We were never in any danger. We had our command module. We could go home if we failed. Still, it was a darn good flight. We were up there 30 days, and we had just enough free time to stare out that big window and see the Earth going by and wish we had studied geography more in school or in preparation, because you only saw something for about 30 to 40 seconds, and then it was gone behind you. Took a lot of pictures.
I was actually quite interested when in that interview that Fred gave. He said that the approach and landing tests were like the highlight of his career. And Pete Conrad once said that he considered the Skylab mission to be the highlight of his, and he'd been on the moon. And so it's quite interesting that the two.
It is. He did say that, and in a sense it was true. Mm. But a guy who stepped on the moon, to my mind, that would always be the highlight. You remember what Pete said when he stepped on the moon? He said, "That may have been a small step for Neil, but it's a giant leap for me." He was about 4 inches shorter than Neil was. But anyway, yeah, it was great having Pete up there on the flight. And the reason that Pete found Skylab so important for him personally, he had been one of the military test pilots who went through the selection process for the original seven astronauts. And along the way during that process, he was treated very roughly by a certain Air Force surgeon and resented it. And at the bar that evening, he called the guy out and accused him of being rough and unnecessarily so. And they didn't pick him. He missed the selection, despite the fact that he was thoroughly qualified. So and he must have told me that story three times during the flight. Okay, he was rejected from the original seven for being psychologically unqualified for long duration spaceflight. Okay, and he wiped that one out with his flight on Skylab. It was great to have two veterans from Apollo willing to stick around and fly on Skylab. One of them was Pete, the other was Alan Bean.
Yeah, I think it worked out well for him in the end, you know, so not being selected on that original Mercury 7. So,
Talking to the Space Association of Australia, that's Joe Kerwin, a Skylab 2 astronaut. And if you want to hear more about from Joe Kerwin, come along to the Space Association meeting on May the 22nd. Yes, May the 22nd at 8 p.m. And we'll be having a look at Skylab 50 years. And Joe Kerwin, we've recorded a talk with a chat with him. And this will be exclusive to the Space Association. The meeting's at the Golden Gate Hotel at 238 Clarendon Street, South Melbourne, and you can find out details about that at space.asn.au. That's space.asn.au. I'm Andrew Rennie.